Hi, this is Two Girls Talking, episode 48. I'm Katie Kiley from 97.1 The River in Atlanta. We are a great classic hit station, and I do afternoon drive there. And I'm here with my good friend Melissa Ruggieri, the music critic for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She also does the music scene blog on AJC.com. We are Two Girls Talking, and as we've started doing since the new year, we're going to start with a rock riddle and see if you knew the answer last week. I'll read it to you first, and then Melissa can tell me where you get the hints.
Okay.
All right. One of my songs is for an athletic king. Words don't come easy. The music's my thing. In my first album's title, There Is Nothing Above, I play many places, but Atlanta I love.
It would be Elton John.
Did you know right away?
Well, the music's my thing. I don't write the words. The music's my thing would have been my first tip-off, being that, you know,
Bernie
does all the... Yeah. And... being in Atlanta, I know Elton's history here. And
that he loves. He still has a place
he
here.
Does.
And then when he tours in the South, he bases himself here. So
yeah.
One of my songs is for an athletic king.
Daniel. No.
Billie Jean King.
Oh, that king. Right. Philadelphia Freedom. Right. Sure.
Words don't come easy. The music's my thing. Mm-hmm. You answered. In my first album's title, There's Nothing Above.
Blue Sky.
Empty Sky.
Empty Sky.
His first album in 1969. Wasn't released in the U.S. until 1975, though. And I play many places, but Atlanta I love. Elton John. And the reason why we did the rock riddle about Elton today is that we've got the Academy Awards coming up Sunday. Elton John is not only going to be up for an Oscar, but he's going to sing too, perform,
right?
He
is. Yeah, they just announced the performers, and Elton will be singing I'm Gonna Love Me Again from Rocket Man. And it's going to be great to see him, you know? I mean,
that song was the only new song
yes.
in the movie, right?
Yes, and they played over the credits over the movie if you haven't seen
end.
It yet. So just, you know, stick around and wait for it.
Does that mean the actor will sing with him? What's the guy's name?
Taron Egerton.
Oh my God, he's so good.
He might. I mean, and if they do, it'd probably be a surprise because right now they've only announced Elton. It actually would have been funny if they'd announced Taron and Elton
and then
came
Elton
out.
Came out.
But I guess you want to get the name recognition out there early that he's going to be performing. You know, it's so funny. After 2 years of having Bohemian Rhapsody and then A Star Is Born, last year, you sort of had these two, you know, years of movie stuff, music stuff that was so prominent in movies that this year was almost a little bit of a letdown because Rocket Man, you know, didn't get a ton of nominations, but at least the song is nominated. And some of the other songs that are nominated are I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away, which Randy Newman will be performing. That is from Toy Story 4. And then I'm Standing With You from the movie Breakthrough, which I am not familiar with, but Chrissy Metz, who is in This Is Us, who has a lovely voice, she's going to be performing it. Diane Warren wrote it, and Diane Warren has been nominated for an Oscar, I think the last 3 years, it seems.
What movie?
It's called Breakthrough.
Okay, I don't know.
Which, no, I guess it was just a small independent one. And then Idina Menzel will be performing Into the Unknown from Frozen 2, which I don't think has taken off like Let It Go did because I'm not that familiar with the song. And she's going to be performing with Aurora. And Cynthia Erivo. Cynthia Erivo is a brilliant Broadway performer who is nominated for 2 Oscars. She's nominated for the lead role in Harriet for an actress award. She is also nominated for song, which called Stand Up, which is from Harriet. And I got to talk to her a little bit on the red carpet at the Clive Davis pre-Grammy gala. And she's such a lovely person. You know, you see these people on the red carpet and you get a sense of who is well-groomed, you know, media savvy wise, and who is just going through the motions and who just doesn't want to be there. The ones who don't want to be there just ignore you and keep walking and don't even stop. But Cynthia Erivo got there probably one of the earliest people to arrive. And she spoke to every single journalist who wanted to talk to her on that red carpet and gave you her full attention. She's actually in town now filming the Aretha Franklin. It's a National Geographic series about Aretha Franklin called Genius. And she's playing Aretha.
Oh, wow.
That. And she's been in Atlanta a lot recently because there's that new series on HBO called The Outsider, which Jason Bateman.
Oh, my God. I love that.
I am too. I'm an episode behind. Actually, I'm 2 episodes
behind. One of my friends is in that. And I was like,
oh, that's funny.
I think that's Suhaila, the nurse that worked with the... Never mind.
I'm not sure I got there yet.
That
okay.
far. I was so excited. I was just watching it last night. So who does she play in that?
She plays the really creepy lady, actually.
The one with the dress
uh-huh.
or the braids?
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's not creepy. She's just weird.
Yeah. Well, okay. She's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, but oh my gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, she's won Tonys. I mean, she's an amazing person. And she was just so kind and lovely
to talk
to.
She's a singer, too.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot wait. Okay. That makes me so excited because I've got to tell you, The Outsider. Sorry, we're going to
no, like
totally
okay.
take a
yeah.
tangent
yeah.
here, but I just watched the fourth episode.
I'm only on the third. Yeah.
Okay, well, you'll see the nurse. That is the nurse that is the friend of... Never mind, I don't want to tell you too much. Okay. It's so good. It's so creepy. It's so...
I know. It's dark, though, and I mean dark in the visual sense. I have such a hard time seeing things happening
well,
in that show.
Well, the blood on the mouth thing.
No, but I mean, just in general. I mean, everything is shot so dark. I did not watch Game of Thrones, but I heard so much about it. I guess it was the penultimate episode.
I'm like the only person that never watched it either.
that you couldn't see anything. Like, there was some big battle scene that everybody was complaining about. It was shot so darkly that you couldn't tell what was going on. I feel like that watching The Outsider sometimes. I'm like, I cannot see. Are you in a forest? Are you in a house?
Well, you know what it's like to me? It reminds me of gloomy Atlanta because it was filmed in Atlanta.
Yeah. And other
it's
parts
like,
of Georgia, yeah.
Like November is when it rains and it's kind of dreary and the whole thing seems set in that. But it's so good.
It could also be my TV. I mean, that's a possibility.
It is
too.
Possible.
But it is very good. It is very good. I love the first episode with, you know, Jason Bateman's prominent character. And he's very
so
involved in this show as well. And he's in Atlanta a lot, too. But yeah, Cynthia Erivo
is... I'm telling you, but that's so exciting to hear that because I was like, who is this woman?
Yeah.
She's a really good actress. But now to know that she's a singer on top of
it.
Yes,
she's
And I'm
she's
just telling you as an aside.
Singer.
It is based on a Stephen King story, so if you can't handle Stephen King, you're not going to want to watch
it. And you know how I am with scary things. I do not like them at all. You forced me to go see It because I had to save you a seat, and I sat with my hoodie over my head the entire time.
It's true.
And I never watched It 2, even though it's on the plane that I was just on. And I thought, well, if I watch it on the plane, how scary could it be? Nope, not happening. But I'm not scared by this at all. It's just a little creepy.
Oh, I'm surprised you're
Although
not.
Although maybe I haven't got to a part that's really scary
it just,
yet.
That whole scene, the shooting scene, was like, oh my God.
Yes.
Because it was very... I would imagine that if you're really in that kind of a situation, that's what it's like.
Yes.
And it was just,
creepily realistic, actually.
Very well done. Yeah. So that's exciting to know that this girl's going to be on.
Yeah, she's going to be on the Oscars. And then in addition to the nominated songs, the show is also going to have a special appearance by Questlove. And he's going to be doing a special, you know, little thing that they do on the Oscars sometimes. So it's kind of a cool...
Quick question. So Beyonce is not...
Not that I have
nominated
seen.
For the
no,
Lion,
she's not nominated.
Lion King
no.
thing? Okay. All right.
She is not. So it's going to be Randy Newman, Elton John, Chrissy Metz, Idina Menzel, and Cynthia Erivo.
Cynthia Erivo is the girl to watch for. I'm telling you. I'm just so impressed.
Yeah. She's really well
known
in Broadway.
I feel like I've just discovered something
circles.
New. That's cool. And then watch for my friend Suhaila in the same
Who's
show.
The nurse.
I just was like, I know this, but I haven't seen her in like 20 years, but we're still Facebook friends, and
that's
she's
so
the
funny.
Most lovely girl. And I was like, if it's Suhaila, she's matured, you know, grown up.
Yeah, sure.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. So we've got to talk about, especially because it was such a interesting Grammys with the fact that Kobe Bryant dies just hours before. And that certainly cast this thing over the Grammys where a lot of artists decided not to do interviews and stuff that were so...
Or come back to the press room.
I can imagine. Yeah. So tell us what it was like to be there then under those circumstances because you were right in the middle of all this.
Yeah, I had literally just parked and getting there to park is the most stressful part of that day. So I just like breathed that sigh of relief that, okay, I'm here, I'm
good. What time was this?
Oh, 11:30. And you have to be in this garage by noon or you're locked out. And you're supposed to be in the media center by 12:30 or you're locked out, although that never
Long
really
day,
actually
girl.
Happens.
Wow.
12 hours, it's a 12-hour day. But really, honestly, driving there and parking. Parking is the worst
is
part
the
of it.
Hard part.
So I had just parked. I had just sort of exhaled and, you know, getting my stuff together. And I was walking across the LA Live atrium, if you will. You know, I mean, all the shops and restaurants are there, but there's a big empty space in the middle of it where they just have big screens up and stuff. And a good friend of mine, Scott Kirkland, he's a photographer who lives out in LA, and we've known each other since, you know, our Richmond days. Scott was already in the media center, and I look down, I have a text from Scott, and he says, Kobe Bryant is dead. I said, oh my God, you know, what happened? And he said, helicopter crash. And it was weird because, and not in any way am I comparing this to 9/11, but it was weird because I was out in a public place where I started to look around and like everybody with phones now, everybody was getting that same news at the same time, you know, because then I got a news alert maybe a minute or two after he texted me. I just stopped in my tracks really. And like two cops walked by me and stopped. And one was like, hey, did you see this? And like, you know, it was like showing him his phone. And then I heard like a woman like down the block going, oh my God, Kobe Bryant died. You know, so it was just this weird collectiveness of, it's just so bizarre when you find out these things about people who it's just so random. It's one thing when it's somebody who's older, sick, maybe expected at some point.
Yeah, people will say, oh, I'm so sad,
I'm
so
sad,
dying. I'm like, they're 100. It's like they're going to.
Of course, they lived a great life. And, you know, and at that point, you know, we didn't know about his daughter, but it just really kind of...
41 is really young.
It just sort of hits you like... We tend to look at music and sports stars as immortal. And then when something like this happens... Then I looked up and, you know, the Staples Center is right in front of me, you know, 10 feet away. And you kind of go, oh, wow, this is kind of eerie, you know. And the media entrance where we go in, it's actually the area. And so everything was fenced off like it always is for the Grammys because the public isn't allowed really that close to the Staples Center, but they are allowed in that LA Live Plaza because there are restaurants there and obviously they want to stay open. But I was walking into the media center through this area called Star Plaza, and like it immediately hit me like, oh my God, that's right. This is where all the statues are. Surely there's a statue of Kobe. I could take some pictures and send them back to the paper and whatever. You know, I walk up to one statue, Jerry West. I walk up to another statue, you know, Magic Johnson. Another statue, Shaquille O'Neal, hockey player here. And I'm like, okay, where's the Kobe statue? And there were a couple cops, you know, standing out front. And I said, Kobe statue? Nowhere? And the guy shook his head and he said, no, they've been talking about doing one, but he doesn't have one here yet. So you know he's going to have one now. But
wow.
It was just really, you know, and I walked in. Yeah, it was just this pall was immediately cast over everything.
It's funny as I'm thinking as you're saying this, can't relate in Atlanta because we haven't had winning teams. Although, it'd be, you know what I mean?
Right, having this champion, but, this, you know, world-renowned champion.
Right, but when you think about
champion.
Dominique Wilkins or somebody, right. That it would be that, you know, it is hard to relate if you're from a city that doesn't have such a...
Sure, but, I mean,
but
he
being
built
in
that place.
LA at that
I
building
mean,
had
the Staples
to be
Center
strange.
It was so strange. So, you know, I'm frantically asking people, is there anything of Kobe around in this area that I can get to take a picture of? And this nice security guard said, well, you know, when you go upstairs, which is where I had to go, you know, she's like, make a left. There's a hallway with pictures and there's a picture of Kobe getting one of his MVP awards. So I found that and, you know, took a picture of that. So
for the paper,
you know, at least I was able to, you know, grab something. And, you know, of course, my editor was like, hey, can you get comments from people? I'm like, I can't leave this, you know, I leave the building. And plus, I didn't have red carpet access for the Grammys because they do that pre-telecast, which is 3.5 hours ahead of the show. So I can't be in two places at once.
Right.
I mean, it just isn't going to work. So I always just do that rather than the red carpet because I usually do the red carpet at Music Cares and the Clive Davis party. And that's enough red carpeting for me.
And that's the night before?
Those are the two nights before the Friday and Saturday. Yep. So yeah, by Sunday, I mean, I'm already exhausted totally red carpeted out. But, you know, I was hoping that anybody who came back to the press room would want to say a few things. And really the only two who did were DJ Khaled because, you know, he was there to honor Nipsey Hussle and there was a lot of death.
He was definitely, and
Tyler, the Creator, who's a very sharp young man. He's a rapper. He's an LA native. So that, like you say, yeah, I mean, when you're from there.
Yep.
But Kobe was one of those talents who just transcended, you know, that's the thing. Everybody knew who he was. And just such a tragic, tragic, senseless thing that you just don't really even believe it. And then, you know, maybe about an hour later when the news reports were coming out that his daughter was with him. And then, of course, the other people who, you know, all the people who were lost in that. And I read the other day that he had gone to church that morning with his daughter.
Yep.
And, you know, at least, you know, you're happy to hear that. But it's just, you know, you say goodbye and you say, hey, I'll be back in a couple hours. And cliff.
Well, you and I are both Catholic mm-hmm. people. And so we know that they're fine. They are just fine.
Yeah.
They're in the arms of something much greater than we
know. I know. And you just pray
that
it was fast
family,
and that it was, you know, that no one suffered. And,
you know, there's a good message here, though. I think you were the one that we've sort of joked about the fact of why on earth would you go up when there's...
I know. Fog. Right.
You know better, right? So that's just a lesson to all of us. If something just doesn't seem right, just seemed like a given that why on earth was that guy flying?
On the other hand, I can kind of, you know, This is his personal pilot. This guy's been flying since, I think, 2007. This was the helicopter he flew. I mean, this is not some random, oops, didn't know where the instruments were. You know, and he was in contact with the tower, and he got permission to fly. I mean, flying by sight. I've learned a lot about helicopters, as we probably all have the last couple of days. But I think probably what happened was, you know, maybe he said to Kobe, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't go up. And Kobe's like, oh, man, it's OK. You know, we got to get to the game. You know, it'll be fine. You know, who knows? I mean, it was probably just something so casual that you don't even think about it. Personally, I am never getting in one. I've joked that the reason is because I'm not putting my weight down on anything. So that's the reason I'm never getting in one. And also, I mean, I've just really kind of gotten over my fear of flying now because I fly so much and you know, it is what it is. But helicopters just freak me out too much. But, you know, Kobe used a helicopter. After, like, people use a car.
Right.
And
it was a sad distraction,
but I will say this too. I know you were out of town, so you may have missed some of all the drama that was going on with the Grammys themselves.
I did a little bit, yeah.
And that was quite a week. And I think the tenor of what may have taken place that night changed as well because of Kobe's death. Alicia Keys, I thought, did a lovely job.
I agree.
Of establishing that. I'm sure she knew him and it was a personal loss for her too. But to be able to, you know, carry through and bring Boyz II Men out to sing a song and just have that calming effect. I actually sent out a tweet saying, I would like to take Alicia Keys with me everywhere to talk me off of every ledge because she seems to have this Earth Mother.
She definitely does. Everybody seems to respect her. I don't think she's the most exciting host.
And she's not.
But in that situation, yes. they were so lucky to have yes. somebody like that.
I was thinking back to Ellen hosting the Emmys after 9/11 and how perfect she was for that moment, yep. too. And like Alicia Keys said, they never in a million years would have thought they would have to open the show right. Doing something like that. And it was a weird show. It was a very weird
show.
Well,
I got to tell you, from watching at home, I was out of the country. So it was mm-hmm. like one of those things where I did miss. I want to ask you a little bit about the Grammy news with a woman and then the Aerosmith drama. Holy cow. But
yeah.
I watched because I feel like it's homework and I right. don't enjoy it more and more over the years because
you don't know a lot of the acts.
It's less and less about rock
yeah,
and roll
sure,
and it's more about stuff to me that's not yeah. real music.
Mm-hmm. There were some
I thought
good performances,
it was
though,
a great show.
Yeah.
I was really intrigued mm-hmm. by a lot of people like that, her, H-E-R. Mm. I just think that
talented.
Person, wow.
She's I'm like, a great talent.
I would never know who that was if I weren't watching the Grammys.
And I think they did a nice job this year of mixing, balancing some veteran artists that, you know, you're going to see Bonnie Raitt and you're going to see Sheila E. And Prince,
yeah,
I mean, and Usher
yep.
doing Prince, you know, so I mean,
that
songs that you're familiar
great.
With. But then you're also, you know, they're trying to bring in this new wave of her and Billie Eilish and Lil Nas X, who's from Atlanta. And that's not necessarily my thing either. But as somebody who has to cover the stuff, you know, I have to be more attuned
yeah,
to it than
really
you do.
It's really your
I
mean, homework, right, and for right. me, it just is.
And it's but it's kind of cool to hear, though, that, you know, you may have found somebody like Maggie Rogers, we were talking about, you know, not too long ago, because I think a friend of yours knows her or something.
Yes.
And I was telling you, you know, how fabulous she was at Shaky Knees last year. And there are some young people out there who are worth the time and the exposure.
Well, and the Billie Eilish thing. Okay, I'm looking, I'm going, great, green hair, looks like the Grinch and on a
right.
bad day. And, you know, she walks up. And then it's like I learned so much about her brother. Producing
mm-hmm.
it. They're doing it in their home
yep.
on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that the music is all about, it's all depressing.
It's
you
about
know,
things that 17-year-olds want to hear.
Yes.
And, you know, we can all go back and relate to that for sure. I mean, I will honestly say I personally don't get the Billie Eilish fanfare. I think she's talented, but not to the extent that, you know, everybody seems to love her. Nothing against her. I'm glad she performed that song because I think some of her other stuff is like Bad Guy. It's a good song, but it's a formless song. Like it has no hook. And that's the reason I don't really like her stuff. It's like it doesn't sound, it's not conventional enough for me, which is probably the point.
Got it.
You know,
yep.
But that's the ballad that she sang. And she's somebody like a Lady Gaga and like a Beyonce that when you first heard them, you never realized how good of a singer they were because the music they were singing didn't lend itself to that. And that's how I feel about Billie Eilish. The first couple songs she released, it was more about the sound of the song and not her voice. But doing a song like that, you really heard just what a
there
lovely voice she
yep,
has.
Yep.
And so I was glad that she did that. She was on Howard Stern a couple months ago, and I actually liked her much better after hearing her two-hour interview with him because you did get to know, like, her family is so supportive. They were there with her.
And, yes, and her brother saying that they recorded while the family was in the
yeah,
house
yeah,
and the mom was making meals.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was
and
really
her brother won Producer of the Year, which is also pretty spectacular when, you know, some of those producers he was up against were people who've been in the business a lot longer. So.
Well, and he was lovely. The way he was very gracious when he accepted and the humility, I was like, okay.
And they both came backstage, which I can't say is true of like 80% of the other people who won, which is also strange. I mean, normally we get really every winner will come back there. And I think it was partially they didn't want to be asked about the Grammy brouhaha. And I think partially they didn't want to, I mean, maybe not talk about Kobe, not that there's anything controversial about it, but, or, well, you know, just decide not to come back. But Billy and Phineas did come back at the very end. You know, and then, of course, the room monitor is like, okay, we have time for three questions. And they're kind of like, we're good. We could stay here, you know, whatever. And then, you know, they kind of hustle them off. But you got the impression that they were fine sticking around.
That's cool.
Which was cool. And it reminded me a little bit of Adele a couple of years ago where, you know, she was the big winner of the night. And although she didn't win all four because only Billie Eilish and Christopher Cross have swept the major four
right.
categories. But Adele came back and they did the whole, you know, we have time for two questions. And she looked at the person in the room monitor and she said, oh, no, I'm staying here as long as they want to ask me questions. I might never get this chance again. God bless her. You know, I mean, like the people who realize, yeah, this is a big moment in your career. And regardless of what you feel the worth of a Grammy is or, you know, if it is a valid assessment of your creativeness or whatever, I mean, it still is the industry pinnacle of awards. And if you're fortunate enough to have been bestowed with an armful of them, then sure, why not take a few minutes to
Bingo.
Bask in it and answer a few questions? I mean, you know, all we want to know from her is, you know, what are you working on next? And when did you realize that this music was actually, you know, being heard outside of, you know, the internet, really? And you know, and they had some interesting answers. And yeah, they both seem like very nice
Cool. I thought so too. I thought they came. So as you're talking about Grammy brouhaha, let's touch on that. I don't want to get too deeply into it because I want to ask you more about Aerosmith.
But okay. Yeah.
Tell us about what the lawsuit was, because somebody, oh, I got to try to think of who this was now, knows one of the people that's being sued. And she's like, oh, he's always been wonderful with my family. But this...
Are we talking about the person who lives in Atlanta?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's public news. I mean, it's
okay. Go ahead and tell the story.
So Neil Portnow, you know, after his, you know, women need to step up thing from a couple of years ago, his contract was going to be up in 2019 anyway. Everybody likes to say, oh, he was pushed out. Neil Portnow had been the president and CEO of the Recording Academy for about 20 years. And I would see him every year. He was a lovely man, very, very old school, very gentlemanly type. And after all that happened, and then he announced the next year that he would be retiring in 2019. It was like, oh, it's because of his contract was ending. He's, you know, he's old enough to be retired and he has enough money that he doesn't need this agita every day, you know. So they hired this woman who had been, I think, the CEO, I'm not sure, but very high up in Bono's Red Foundation, Deborah Dugan. They vetted her, but they really wanted her because they kept courting her. And so she became the president and CEO middle of last year. So she'd only been with the Grammys for a few months. There's so many different details about it. What originally happened was 10 days before the Grammys, around January 16th, she was placed on administrative leave. And then on January 22nd, she filed a lawsuit against the Recording Academy alleging that it was discrimination that she was let go, and also the sexual harassment that was allegedly put upon her by Joel Katz, who is a lawyer who is based here, and he is also the Academy's lawyer. And she had met with him for a dinner back in May of last year, like when they were in talks about, you know, signing her final paperwork to become the Grammy. So there's a lot of just craziness, you know. I mean, and her stuff was also that there was some impropriety going on at the Grammys, that the voting was rigged and that she, you know, didn't think that it was fair the way that the nominees were being chosen. And she had pointed all this out. So she's saying that because she started kind of getting a little
making
too close
waves.
To the kind of, yeah. I mean, and they hired her apparently to be that type of person, but I guess the old guard got a little uncomfortable when she got too close to the flame and started saying, what's up with this? And then also how much money they were spending on outside legal counsel. And, you know, she wanted to bring it in-house, which would save the Academy millions and millions of dollars every year, that kind of stuff. But then also there was an HR issue that Neil Portnow's former administrative assistant had filed a grievance via HR against Deborah Dugan that she was bullying her and just her style of management. And this woman actually had gone on administrative leave. So, I mean, it's sort of like this
mess.
What
did she say that Katz did?
She said that when they went to this dinner, and this is all public knowledge. I mean, it's all, you know, public filing. When they went to this dinner back in May, I believe it was, of last year, that he, you know, he kept calling her baby and you know, suggested that she come on his private plane and come with him to one of his houses somewhere, and kept saying, you know, things like, you know, you're really pretty, you're so pretty, and that kind of stuff, and, you know, bought really expensive wine to sort of ply her with, that type of stuff, which of course he denies. So,
yep.
You know, and said, you know, he thought it was a perfectly fine dinner, that there were other people involved, and denies all the allegations. So that is still going on. And all these things were culminating a week before their biggest ceremony. So everybody was holding their breath of sort of like, what is going to happen? Is Alicia Keys going to say something? And she actually did make a couple of veiled comments regarding, you know, we're going to make things better, we're going to change, you know, we're not going to stand for the old type of thing, which...
See, I wasn't sure if that was political. I was just happy there were so many distractions that they didn't get too political.
No, it wasn't at all. No, yeah. it was really about that. And,
okay, interesting.
And, you know, I think there may have been more comments from some of the artists regarding that if Kobe hadn't died that morning. I mean, I think that really did change a lot of everybody's thinking. And not that this is unimportant, because it certainly
is.
Yes. But you know what I mean? It's like when you hear somebody just dies like that,
we've got to put things
in perspective. And I think that sort of happened.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was a very weird ceremony. It was very odd that not as many people came backstage, and just the whole night itself, I think a lot of people didn't know what to say, you know?
Well, and then to top it off, I've always got to watch for the Rockers and support them. So I was really blown away by how I just didn't think Aerosmith did a good job.
I know. And we were just talking about this off the podcast. You know, I watch it on a monitor in a room, and it's a different experience because I do record it. And then usually when I get home sometime this week, which I haven't done yet because I've only been home for a day, I do watch it because there are things that I miss because I'm writing, because somebody has come back to talk to us. It's just, you can't do everything. And hopefully, you know, you pray that you don't miss something really important. So I was watching. I did see the performance, though, and I thought the beginning was, I thought the Living on the Edge part was sloppy. I agree with you on that. But I felt like once Run DMC got there, it kind of kicked it up a notch and it became really fun. Because to me, it felt like the mood shifted at that point from being very melancholy for that first 45 minutes or so. And then you got these rockers come in and kick everybody's butt. And I thought it was cool to have Run DMC back with them doing that version of it, which really was a pioneering thing back in 1985. And, you know, like you had said before, everybody was like, what is Aerosmith doing? You know, and it was such a smart thing for them to do, as it turned out.
Feel like they didn't rehearse. I feel like, you know,
that's possible.
And their drama on the side. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that you have an opportunity. You're Aerosmith.
Right. And you're being
honored.
And
you've got a different. Yes, you're being mm-hmm. honored. But not just that. You have a different audience mm-hmm. than you would normally have.
Right.
And, you know, I was just like, dude, everything I tell people about you, you're making me look like a liar now.
Because
our dudes, I should say.
Right, right.
It just struck me as it doesn't sound good. It didn't look good. It even looked like, I wrote on somebody's Facebook post, I said, it looked like they had just gotten sued or something. Because
yeah.
the looks on their faces were not
yeah.
very happy. So I think maybe they were having some technical issues too. But
and Steven is very much a stickler about technical issues. Because when I saw them in Vegas last April, it was the first week of those Vegas shows. I think it was maybe the third or fourth show they did. And there were some technical problems happening that night. And he kept looking off stage like somebody was going to lose their job at the end of the night. And I remember during the encore with Dream On, the piano that was supposed to rise from the floor, it didn't. And ooh, he was not. And then, and I'm sorry, it didn't. And then it did eventually. And he sat down to play and there was no sound. Like it wasn't mic'd.
Well, at least it didn't start going back down again.
And
yeah,
he yelled over to Joe. He said something, you know, like, hey, man, we know how to do this the other way. And just, you know, kept the show going, hopped on the piano. Joe joined him and Joe played the intro to Dream On.
No piano.
So they are really, really into everything sounding perfectly. So it's very well possible that something may have happened that they just couldn't hear. It was a weird weekend for them too. You know, I went to the Music Cares thing on Friday night, and a lot of, you know, some people who walk the red carpet, like we talked to Cheap Trick, and I kind of made the joke to Robin Zander. I said, well, you guys know what it's like to play with a different drummer. But he said, you know, he's like, oh, come on, that's completely different.
That's pretty funny,
yeah.
actually.
I know. And, but he, you know, he said, yeah, but, you know, that was different. He said, you know, we invited him to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's our friend, you know.
And in case you didn't hear about this, there was a Joey Kramer was ill about a year ago, or had an injury.
After that Vegas thing, maybe in June of last year, yeah. He injured himself, I believe, performing, I think playing.
So they had somebody fill in for
him. His drum tech has been filling in for him in Vegas, like all these months, and any other shows they've done on and off, you know, throughout the past.
But then you get the honor of we were just talking about 50 years together, the original mm-hmm. band, you get the honor of playing the Music Cares event together and the Grammys, and the band said, you have to audition.
Yeah.
Which to me is like, oh my God, my heart just went, that is horrible. You know what I would do? I'd go, you know, he's had some issues, but he's our brother, like they said, and he's going to play with us and take it. At that point, you could blame it on him if
right.
it sounded like crap.
Well, that was the thing. And I think that was their vantage point was he just told us, you know, 5 days ago that he was ready to come back and play. And we've already made, you know, plans for our performances and rehearse and everything. Part of you goes, okay, I'm sure Joey Kramer can figure out the beat to Walk This Way. He's played it 8 billion times.
Yes.
But I don't know if there's something else going on that's not necessarily physical, that it might be more of an emotional or mental state that they were concerned about.
That doesn't matter.
But as far as his ability to play, you know.
But
I
think that there was tape of him playing and that he could play.
That I did not see.
Yeah,
I know that he tried to go to rehearsal and the two security guards turned him away.
He
felt really
like
bad for him, you know, there. But then at Music Cares, there, Steven Tyler's longtime lawyer, Dina LaPolte, she's known the band for a million years, too. She introduced them to come get their honor. And in her introductory speech, one of the things she said was, you know, I've known these guys a long time. They are brothers and they fight like brothers. So I think that was her way of saying, you know, yeah, there is something going on, but it's just like any other relationship. And that's really what most of the guys on the red carpet we talk to, you know, rock stars that have similar, like, you know, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains was another one who basically said, yeah, I know what it's like. You know, we certainly went through our stuff or whatever. But in the end, you know, you're the guys, you know. So it was, I think, a good truce that they had Joey join them at Music Cares to accept the honor. They came out on stage together. But what was really weird is the whole night, I mean, everybody performed really, really well. Gavin DeGraw, of all people,
right.
who I expected nothing from, I I think was the best performer. He did an amazing performance, and he started at the piano, and he actually went out into the audience, and he found Steven sitting at his table, and they were doing What It Takes, and he had Steven singing with him at the table. Aww. It was really a very cute thing.
There were lots of great. Who else?
Gary Clark Jr. and Yola performed together, and whew, that was a combo. Yola, she's a newcomer from Britain. Cheap Trick played Rats in the Cellar, kind of fun. Kesha did a really haunting version of Janie's Got a Gun. She did it with just a string quartet behind her, and they were sort of a minor key. They kind of changed it a little bit, so it sounded really eerie. And she was very, very powerful. Ashley McBride, she's a country singer. She's like one of those tough girl outlaw type country singers. She did Dude Looks Like a Lady and just put her own spin on it. So there were all these really fun performances, and even the Jonas Brothers, they were fine. I mean, it was just a fun night. And then everybody, of course, is waiting for Aerosmith, more so than usual when you wait for the act to come up, because everybody's waiting to see what's going to happen. And when they're introduced, they all walk on stage, and the place was silent. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. People weren't even necessarily clapping. Everybody was just holding their breath, waiting to see if Joe. And then everybody's kind of hear like, "Oh, Joey's there." And Steven Tyler, the first thing he said was, he leans into the microphone. He goes, "Well, you people got really quiet really fast." And then he just kind of went into this little speech about brotherhood and something or other. And Joey was standing right next to him. Steven had his arm on Joey's shoulder the whole time he was talking. And Joey's the only other person who spoke.
Yeah.
And he thanked everybody, thanked his wife, and again, you're going, is this like a farewell speech? Is this I'm just grateful to be part of this process speech? And then Joey walked off stage, and the rest of the band went to the other end of the stage to perform, and the drum tech guy came running out and hopped behind the drum kit. And they sounded fine, but there was, again, this weird cloud hanging over things. And the end of it was very awkward. They play their final, they did like four songs in the Hollywood Vampires. So Alice Cooper and Johnny Depp came out to do Train Kept Rollin', was the last song they did. And, Steven's doing his thing where he's throwing his mic stand around or whatever. And the song ends. The song ends the way it's supposed to end. And they're all just sort of standing on stage. So Steven, who could, talk to a wall, just starts babbling, thanking everybody again. And he says, "Joey Kramer, where are you, man?" And, he finds him in the crowd and he points him out and he says, "We love you, my brother." So I don't think there's acrimony there, but there's something, and I guess we'll find out one of these days when. And they are back in Vegas, I don't think with Joey Kramer, but I believe John Douglas, that's the drum tech, is still going to be playing with them. So,
well, I think it's a shame.
See.
It's one of those things. It's kind of like John Paul Jones with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. There's sort of this ganging up feeling of it. You can just sort of have the empathy of, they did something with him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that I just thought was, come on, you guys. Just, they're all equal parts of it as far as I'm concerned. I know there are two guys that are way out front and center, but still, not to have that empathy and to, you're right, we may be missing something huge, but I would have taken the chance and been the good guy instead of looking like an ass.
Well, I think that's what they were trying to do by having him come out at Music Cares, and it's unfortunate that he was not part of the Grammy performance at all, because...
Especially since it sucked.
Well, don't blame the drummer for that.
No, I'm not.
I'm not at all.
I'm just
kidding.
Actually, yeah.
But... Music Cares isn't something that's on TV. It's not televised.
So that's right. So
people didn't necessarily know unless, they read about it. And even though there were a million signs of, no, absolutely no photo, no video, of course, the rules don't apply to, 20 people in there who had to take their own video. I did not, because I follow those rules because they're there for a reason.
Right.
But I was tempted when Joey came out just to take it for myself and not post it anywhere, but I didn't. But, people who didn't attend that, and you wouldn't have attended that unless you were a member of the Academy or you have
you
a lot of money,
no,
or
clue.
You were a media person who was able to get in. You really would have no clue, because it did seem genuine. I mean, the affection between Steven and Joey did seem like a real thing, and it seemed as if Steven was trying to make amends for what had happened. They didn't allude to it, in any way, but you knew it was there, And
I feel like I'm such a toughie with this stuff, but the heart of it is, that's a 50-year band
member. Well, it's a 50-year band member, and also, it's not as if the rest of the band hasn't had their issues.
Tom
Hamilton had tongue cancer. Steven, Joe had his heart thing not that long
ago. Steven's fallen off
Steven's
a stage more than once.
I mean, Steven's had his issues over the years that, that they've all
You're
come
right.
back to.
I mean,
so,
that's a really good point.
So this is the band this is not the first time that someone's had to deal with someone's, injury or physical or mental whatever that's happening. So,
you're exactly right.
I know.
You're exactly right. Well, I love that you were there, and you were there for such an interesting time of it. It's fun to hear you kind of backstage. That is something they should think about televising. I'm sure they realize that would be something that...
Yes, I know.
Because having different artists perform songs of the artist, and there's so many rockers.
Yes.
Last year it was Fleetwood Mac.
Yes, that, well, 2 years ago, Fleetwood Mac.
Who was last year?
Last year was Dolly Parton.
Oh, was
and
he
Linda Ronstadt
that?
Came
yeah.
out to, for that.
Yeah,
which
so
was
that's
pretty spectacular.
Sounds like very
well, and to air it afterward, I think would be fine. I mean, yeah. they wouldn't want to do it live because then that takes away from the specialness of it. But even just to
Agreed.
Air an edited version of it, whether it's on Netflix or
that's
you
what
know,
they did
cable,
with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they right. used to not televise it at all because I was there.
Yeah,
for
Yeah, I
of
think
them.
Back in the day they didn't at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, no, and I would have had that all rolled up to tape because I was so close to the stage. It was very it used to be much more intimate.
Right, and then it started airing, you know, like a month after or yeah. several weeks after, and now this year is going to be live. And,
yeah. Well, bands. Welcome back.
Yeah, right.
I had a lovely cruise. Okay, since we're beginning and ending now our podcast with a rock riddle, you ready for another one?
Okay.
Add a letter to the garden party guys to get one name. A red-breasted songbird gave more fame to shame. A Mexican rabbit pounded the skins for this band. Together, they're known for low-budget sleight of hand. I'll read it one more time.
Yeah, read it one more time.
Add a letter to the garden party guys to get one name. A red-breasted songbird gave more fame to shame. A Mexican rabbit pounded the skins for this band. Together, they're known for low-budget sleight of hand.
Oh, good luck, everybody.
Do you not know?
No, I don't.
We'll tell you next week, then. Have a great week.